quite an interesting show for you today. Some big, big, big news. So let's start off, though, with a few announcements and news items. Well, it looks like that a couple of so-called wilderness bills here in the state of Idaho are not going to make it through the Congress, although it's still uncertain. It's about 3 days left here in the session, and it doesn't look like that the Senate is going to be passing an appropriations bill, but simply a continuing resolution to fund the government, dumping basically all the hard decisions about the budget that was supposed to have begun October 1st into the lap of the new Congress. And so there's not much of a chance to hook riders onto spending bills, although Congressman Simpson wants to hook as a rider his Central Idaho Economic Development and Recreation Act. He's still somewhat hopeful, although the chances of that are diminishing. And it looks like the Owyhee legislation probably isn't going to go through this year. It hasn't gone through either House, unlike Simpson's bill, which did pass the House of Representatives. Another bill, though, that affects public lands probably isn't going to make it either. And I think this is all good news here. The salvage logging bill is dead, most of the senators say. This is a bill that would basically exempt salvage logging from environmental analysis, and also almost mandate that after a fire, areas be logged. And sometimes that's not such a good idea. And in fact, the research, if you look at Bestia, who is a professor at, I believe, Oregon State University, and if you look at the research by Donato, also from Oregon State University, or if you look at the research on watersheds out there, the worst time to log is after a fire. And dead trees are not wasted. They provide habitat for cavity nesting birds. And they also provide important forest structure once they fall down, even if they're charred. That charcoal acts almost like a sponge. And long-term watershed health is dependent on fires in these forests that we have here in the wild Clearwater country and indeed over the entire northern Rockies region of the United States. So it looks like that salvage bill, a very bad bill, isn't going to make it. And I'm not holding my breath, but maybe the next Congress is not going to look so favorably upon bad legislation and might require that wilderness bills be real wilderness bills rather than land giveaway bills. So that remains to be seen. But a couple of announcements, again, a couple of news items there. It doesn't look like any of those bills will pass, with the possible exception of the Central Idaho Economic Development and Recreation Act. It could get attached onto something, although the chances of that happening are diminishing. I think I'll go to a quick musical break. I just found a CD here. And before we go into the rest of the show, Bob Dylan's new album called Modern Times, fairly new album, and I think I'll play the first song off of that, Thunder on the Mountain. So anyway, here's a little bit of music.
Today's the day you're gonna grab my trombone blue. Well, it's hot stuff here, and it's everywhere I go. I was thinking about the Lizzie Keys. Couldn't keep them quiet when she was born in Hell's Kitchen. I was living down the line. I'm wondering where in the world Lizzie Keys could be. I've been looking for her even clear through Tennessee. my soul is beginning to expand. Took you to my heart and you were sort of understand. You brought me here, now you're trying to run me away. The writing on the wall, come read it, come see what it says. Sleep over there, that's where the music coming from. I don't need any guide, I already know the way. Remember this, I'm your servant both night and day. The pistols are popping and the power's down. I'd like to try something, but I'm so far from town. The sun keeps shining and the north wind keeps picking up speed. Don't forget about myself for a while, go out and see what others need. I've been sitting down studying the art of love. I think it'll fit me like a glove. I want some real good woman to do just what I say. Everybody got to wonder what's the matter with this cruel world today. Betray your love or any other thing. I'm gonna raise me an army, some tough sons of bitches. I recruit my army from the orphanages. I've been to St. Herman's Church, said my religious vows. I sucked the milk out of a thousand cows. I got the pork chop, she got the pie. She ain't no angel and neither am I. Shame on your greed, shame on your wicked schemes. I'll say this, I don't give a damn about your dreams. Twister billion down on me. All the ladies in Washington are scrambling to get out of town. Look like something bad gonna happen. Better roll your airplane down. Everybody going in, I wanna go too. Don't wanna take a chance with somebody new. I did all I could, I did it right there and then. I've already confessed, no need to confess again. Gonna make a lot of money, gonna go up north. I plant and I'll harvest what the earth brings forth. The hammers on the table, the pitchforks on the shelf. For the love of God, God, take pity on yourself.
We're back to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. That was a little cut off of Bob Dylan's new album, Modern Times. Well, we have a very interesting show for you today. We'll be discussing Idaho roadless areas and the policy. There was something very interesting that happened in Washington, D.C. late last week. There's an entity known as the RACNACKETS. That's this acronym. What it was when the Bush administration decided to devolve protecting roadless areas to states. This committee was established. What the Bush administration did to end the roadless rule that was put in place by the Clinton administration, which gave limited, though some protection to roadless areas on the national forest system. These are the undeveloped, the remaining undeveloped areas. The Bush administration withdrew that rule and instead allowed the states to come up with their own proposal, and then came up with a committee to review that proposal, and then it went in front of the Undersecretary of Agriculture, who was Mark Rae, timber industry lobbyist in a former incarnation, and the decision would be made by the administration whether or not to accept the petition or reject it. Well, last week, in front of this meeting, something rather interesting happened. And Governor Risch from Idaho went in front of the committee and said that the petition, and we've talked about this on the show earlier, the petition from the state of Idaho, which was finalized the first part of this year, didn't mean what it said. In essence, he said that he basically supported the rule from 2001 and that he was okay with it, with the exception of about 500,000 acres, and that's a lot of land. He wants to develop or leave open for development about 500,000 acres of the National Forest roadless areas in the state of Idaho. State of Idaho is lucky that we have about 9,000,000 acres of unprotected wild country on our national forests here in this state. Well, that caught a lot of people off guard, and the fallout from that was rather interesting. And one of the things that was amazing about what the governor said, he said people hadn't read his petition or hadn't read the Clinton roadless rule. And we'll deal with that a little bit later in the show when we do some awards. But I think it'd be good to contrast what the 2001 rule does and what the proposal or the petition from Governor Risch proposes to do or does. But first, I think we need to take a step back and look at this from a background perspective. So we have 9,000,000 acres of unprotected roadless land in the state of Idaho. During the late 1990s, the Clinton administration, with the former chief of the Forest Service, Michael Dombeck, went through a process that was the most popular administrative process ever in the history of the country. There were millions of comments submitted. About 95% of them wanted full protection of our nation's remaining roadless or undeveloped areas on the national forest system. And they came out with a proposal or a rule and finalized that rule in 2001, just before the Bush administration took office. That rule was not as strong as conservationists had hoped. But what it did do was it prohibited road building or new roads in roadless areas with some very narrow exceptions. And those exceptions were for things like a relocation of a road that's, say, a hazard, and that the boundary of the roadless area goes up to the edge of that road. Let's say the right side of the road is wild country, but they need to relocate that road a little bit. So that was one of the exceptions, for example. Another was for a valid existing right. If somebody had, say, a mineral lease or a mining claim on the National Forest, and they had a valid right to go develop that, they could build a road there. And that actually applies to just about anywhere on the public lands. Another possible exception, and these are quite narrow, was for road reconstruction, again, and just slight alignment changes for safety purposes. Let's say there was a dangerous switchback and they wanted to slightly change that. So that really wouldn't remove much land from the roadless area. But that was an exception that the Clinton administration thought would be all right. And then another was for environmental cleanup under the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation Liability Act. And that probably doesn't apply to any of the National Forest roadless areas in Idaho, but it generally deals with oil pollution and things like that. And it's really hard to imagine how that might apply. And the last one was if a road represented an extension of development for, again, more valid existing rights, and that's usually for mineral leasing and development of an oil and gas field. Well, those were the only exceptions, and while they might seem like a laundry list, the circumstances under which they would occur would probably be very, very rare, if at all. In terms of logging or timber cutting at all, they also allowed some of that, but it, again, the rule actually says the it is expected that the cutting, sale, or removal of timber is expected to be infrequent, not common at all. Now, some of the exceptions there were to improve threatened, endangered, proposed, or sensitive species habitat. I think it's way too broad, but that's one of the exceptions that was there. And it's kind of hard to show, actually, that that habitat would actually be helped. To maintain or restore the characteristics of ecosystem composition. Again, that's a rather broad catch-all. But, again, I think that needs to be supported by science. And a lot of the recent research on forests seems to indicate that a lot of the older assumptions that we've had, that forests are now thick and that's because of fire suppression, we have to go in there and thin them, really is not valid. Some recent research by Dr. Baker from University of Wyoming casts doubt on the high-frequency, low-intensity fire model being applied across the West. So that was another exception, and it's another exception was it's incidental to an otherwise approved management activity. For example, a mining claim, mining claimants, if they're developing a mine, are allowed to use a certain amount of wood from the public land. Another example was for personal or administrative use. If you were out there and you wanted to cut some wood for a campfire, that would probably be allowable. Or for administrative use, cutting trees for maybe, say, a fence that was being built for whatever reason. But that has to be an administrative use for, let's say, a Forest Service ranger cabin. Or, and the final example is, exception is where the roadless characteristics were previously destroyed by logging or road building, and these areas were established, were inventoried in the forest plans during the most of them were developed in the state of Idaho in the late 1980s. So there was a window of about a little over 10 years for development to occur prior to the establishment of this rule in 2001. So those were the exceptions under the rule put forth by the former administration of Bill Clinton. However, the governor in about 5.5 million, so that's well over half of the roadless or undeveloped areas on the National Forest in the state of Idaho said forest products for personal use or commercial use for forest health reasons. Now, forest health reasons doesn't occur anywhere in the Clinton rule, but he wanted to allow logging for that in some instances. For vegetative treatments, for salvaging and fuel reduction. I mean, that was basically the kind of the forest health reasons that were talked about in the petition, but none of them are mentioned in the rule by Clinton. He said his was consistent with that. In fact, chastised people for saying it wasn't. And lo and behold, well, his proposal wasn't. He said that road construction is a preference toward temporary road construction with mitigation. However, permanent road construction permissible based on long-term ecological need. Now, there really isn't an ecological need for a road. I think that's a hard sell there. But again, that's different than those exceptions that that were in the 2001 rule. So the governor went before this panel and said, I want to protect these areas. In fact, some areas I want to protect more than what the rule put in place by the Clinton administration would do. Rather interesting statement, because the Clinton rule is basically a floor, not a ceiling. It recognizes that there are many areas on the national forests, places that the Forest Service, in fact, recommends for wilderness designation, or other places that have greater protection, and that rule does not diminish that protection. So the governor went and said all those things and caught people off guard. Well, the environmental community was so surprised and wondering what he was talking about, and it wasn't in writing, it wasn't what his petition said, that the response to this proposal was all over the map. Now everybody's sort of backpedaling because the governor backpedaled from his proposal. And there's a little anecdotal story that he met with the chief of the Forest Service, Dale Bosworth, the night before, and basically got, if I can use the term, taken to the woodshed and told that his petition did not have much of a chance, especially under a new Congress who would look very unfavorably upon any kind of potential development for roadless areas. That the only chance it might have is if he were to modify it to make it more in line with the petition from 2001, or the rule from 2001, which a judge just recently said is now in force, a judge in California, because the state of California challenged the Bush administration's proposal to end the protections of 2001 and go back with a state-by-state process where the states could drop out areas or weaken protections or both. So there you have it. We've got a governor who wrote one thing and said another. We have a conservation that's not really knowing what was said. And apparently this is all going to shake out later on this month. So in light of that background, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later, I thought I'd play a little song from Robert Hoyt. Deals with one of the roadless areas that had some development take place in it, so it's no longer as large as it once was, upon the Nez Perce National Forest. And this area is the Mallard roadless area, the famous or infamous, as the case may be, Cove Mallard area and the infamous Cove Mallard timber sales that were stopped by Citizen Direct Action back in the late 1990s. So here's a song from Robert Hoyt called Jack Road.
I wake and sit up in the bright bright sunshine. Things are just as crazy as they seem. I see the old man's beard up in the lodgepole pine, and I realize that it is not a dream. Summer's in the mountains of central Idaho. It's hot as hell one day, next day it snows. The nights are short, the days are long and slow. But the night work gets done, what happens now? No one knows. So we huddle around our fire out on the Jack Road. It's getting late in the century. Perhaps tomorrow is the day. We fight the boredom, but we stay. When they arrive, we'll be right here. If we can hold out till October, we'll have held them off a year. So we huddle around our fire out on the Jack Road. It's getting
back. The Wild Clearwater Country Show here on KRFP Moscow, Idaho. That was a song by Robert Hoyt, Jack Road, a disastrous road built on the edge of the Mallard roadless area, contiguous to the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness. Should have been part of that wilderness up on the Nez Perce National Forest. Headwaters of Big Mallard Creek are within that roadless area. The only fortunate thing is that that disastrous timber sale, only, and I put that in quotes, destroyed about 5,000 acres rather than the entire roadless area of some 30 or 40,000 acres. So wasn't as bad as it could have been. There was another, there were two other timber sales proposed for that area in the infamous and ridiculous Cove Mallard timber sales, and they have not gone forth, and perhaps they never will, especially if some of these rules become implemented, and especially if we were to see passage of the Rockies Prosperity Act or Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act, as it was formerly known. All right, so we talked a little bit about the background behind this strange turn of events where people from the conservation community were tripping over each other, wondering how to respond to the governor, and the governor saying that he didn't really mean what he said, but shame on you for reading what I had written in my petition and believing what it said. Yeah, well, I think that's what the response that should have been. Given this confusion, I think there's some questions that should have been posed to the governor and others. And please recognize that this process was wrong from the beginning. It was taking public lands owned by all Americans and having sort of an exclusive state process, even though it was only a quote-unquote recommendation to the federal government. Under this current administration, it's likely that that recommendation from a state like Idaho would be honored, especially since even in its new incarnation, this proposal from the state would put on the chopping block 500,000 acres of roadless national forest. That's more than many states have in their entire national forest system and roadless areas. And in fact, Idaho is lucky. Of all the states in the lower 48, we have the largest assemblage of wildlands on the national forest system. As I said, it's about 9.3 million acres that were inventoried. That's pretty close to the actual number, although maybe less than that because of development that took place between about 1987, 88, thereabouts, to about 2000. But they are owned by all Americans, and all Americans should have a say. And there shouldn't be an exclusive process where a state or a county has more say than others. Interestingly enough, as we have reported on the show in the past, the citizens of the state seem to want those areas protected. When we went through that process, certainly in Latah County, about 95% of the people said protect all roadless areas in the nearby national forests. Of course, that wasn't and fully protected at that, and that wasn't honored. Well, so some of the questions that the what was called that RACNAC, that acronym that stands for the Roadless Area Conservation National Advisory Committee. What a name, huh? Maybe should have asked. Governor, why did you put the citizens of the state of Idaho and the federal government through this, and I would call it very disingenuous, dishonest process, and gone through and spent all that money when your recommendation, if as you're portraying it, is very similar to the recommendation and actual proposal and rule that came out of the Clinton administration in 2001. So why did we go through all this in the first place, huh? Yeah. And if you didn't really mean what you wrote, why did you write it like that? I think that question deserved to have been asked. Another question should have been asked. Governor, why did you have a catch-all phrase in your petition, adaptive management that could change and allow logging and road building in any of these areas? So just about, especially that 5.5 million acre, that big, largest chunk of land. And then why have you defined the wildland-urban interface in many cases as being 3 to 6 miles wide? Why'd you allow the counties to do that? Actually, it was a process done by the counties. When the research shows that if you want to protect structures, the most important thing you can do is within about 40 meters of buildings. Sounds to me like the wildland-urban interface at a maximum is about 40 meters, which what's that translate to? 100 some odd feet wide, not all these miles. And also research shows, especially in certain forest types, that logging or thinning or clearing really doesn't do a lot to prevent fires. Fires can jump. Fire breaks, as people can remember, in 1988, one of the biggest fire breaks in the world, Yellowstone Lake, didn't prevent fire from jumping, fire brands from going across that lake and starting fires on the other side. And that's actually happened in 1988. So, there you go. Those are some of the questions, I think, that should have been asked. And I had some other questions, too. I mean, why did everybody sort of trip over themselves in responding to this, wondering, hey, this is good, this is bad, without having seen it? And why didn't they ask these questions and be a little bit more cautious? Now everybody's backpedaling on what they said in response to what the governor said, and is creating a rather humorous situation in conservation politics in the state of Idaho. Well, the newspapers have weighed in. Incidentally, the Post Register editorial from December 5th, it's a paper, I believe, out of Idaho Falls. I think what they're suggesting is that the governor made an earnest and studied effort, but only after all the details are sorted out can Idahoans fully evaluate it. That's probably somewhat cautious. I'm not sure he made an earnest and studied effort, especially given what his petition said. But that's kind of interesting. And I think there's some other questions that this editorial, one of the better editorials, raised. Why engage in salvage logging after a fire when science has concluded it doesn't help rejuvenate a forest? Why attack fuel buildup in a forest with intensive logging when forest specialists support a let-burn policy in interior areas? And in fact, as I mentioned before, the science on fuel buildup isn't unanimous that it is a problem. Many of the forest types, especially lodgepole pine forest types out here, burn big and hot regardless of what fuel levels there are. In fact, these fires, big fires, are driven more by climate, and that's what the research shows, than they are by fuel amount. So, again, a good question from the Idaho Falls paper. And they also ask another question. Rich's plan requests a reinventory of areas found not in conformity with roadless designation. They ask, how much acreage will this be and where? That's a good question, because the governor's petition identified areas that he said were no longer roadless, that clearly are undeveloped, without roads and without modern human impacts. So I think that's a good question to ask as well. And he also, the paper also said, why use as a benchmark the 10 National Forest plans when many of these plans are not sufficiently protective and have been challenged, number one. And in fact, many of these plans are now being revised. Right now, the Idaho Panhandle National Forest has had a draft plan out for public comment, and that comment period closed, and so we expect to see a final soon. And the Nez Perce and Clearwater National Forest here in the Wild Clearwater Country, all three forests have land within the Clearwater drainage, has yet to be released in draft form. Of course, the Forest Service has been saying it's going to be released soon for about, 5 years now. And the latest is that we'll see that draft plan in early 2007. Another reporter said, critics of Idaho roadless plan sound conciliatory. Note, again, suggesting that maybe there was some agreement with the governor's new plan in front of this roadless Area Conservation National Advisory Committee, or the RACNAC. Bunch of interesting stuff. So we're going to take a little musical break and come back and sort of wrap this up. This very interesting and very confusing, perhaps intentionally so, issue of national forest roadless areas, or maybe a better way to look at it, it's potential wilderness areas in Idaho. I think I'll go and play another song from this new Bob Dylan album. I think I've chosen the second cut on here, called Spirit on the Water. So this is the Wild Clearwater Country Show, taking a quick musical break.
Spirit on the water, darkness on the face of the deep. I keep thinking about you, baby, and I can't hardly sleep. I'm traveling by land, traveling through the dawn of the day. You're always on my mind.
Hear your name ringing up and down the line.
miles out from some old familiar shrine. I got no choice. Can't believe these things would ever fade from your mind. I could live forever with you perfectly. Over me from east to west, ever since the world began, I only mean it for the best. I won't be with you anyway. Now I'm feeling the warmth. I'm gone away, baby. I won't be back till fall. High on the hill, you can carry all my thoughts with you. You know my. So unfair. I can't go to paradise no more. I killed a man back there. You think I'm over the hill? Think I'm past my prime? Let me see what you got. We can have a walk.
Back to KRFP Moscow, the Wild Clearwater Country Show. Time to wrap up. Well, as I promised, we're going to have a little award presentation. And I thought, under the bizarre and strange circumstances about this confusion, or intentional confusion, or obfuscation, or whatever we should call it, of the roadless rule, and what the state of Idaho is proposing to the federal government, I would call the award, rather than the Whopper of the Week, and here's our little drum roll in front of that, that maybe we ought to call it the Weirdness of the Week. Certainly, the governor probably deserves a Whopper of the Week, and that kind of goes with this bigger package. So we'll give it to him for saying his proposal doesn't mean what it says and that they really meant something different. But that's only the beginning of the strangeness. The conservation groups didn't know how to respond to this. Some people were saying, well, we want to wait. And others saying, well, this is a good step. It certainly had the perception in the media that some of the groups supported the governor's new direction, though none of that was certain. Now they are now saying, oh, no, we really didn't support the new direction. That certainly came across that way. And the Intermountain Forestry Association, a timber industry front group, one of their people said, according to the Statesman, that they supported this Risch's plan, even though it meets the Clinton restraints on logging and road building. Now, the state of Idaho and the Intermountain Forestry Association are suing on the Clinton plan, and they say it's okay. Again, we need some honesty and integrity here in the process. And just to wrap this up, so we're awarding the weirdness of the week to the situation. And there we go, a little clapping for that. Because it's bigger than just a whopper. But just to sum up, I think there needs to be some honesty here. I have to recognize a couple things. Number one, that the roadless rule in 2001 was a small step toward protecting roadless areas, but didn't include complete protection. It had, although very narrowly constrained, it still allowed road building in certain instances, actually more like reconstruction. It did allow some timber cutting or logging, but again, those were under fairly stringent circumstances, although less so than the road building. But it did nothing to prevent off-road vehicles from running all over roadless areas. And so in light of that, I think what conservationists ought to do is step back and say, you know, we already have a proposal out there to protect Idaho's National Forest roadless areas. It's called the Rockies Prosperity Act, or Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act, which protects all these roadless areas as wilderness. And we should not lose sight of the fact in seeing them whittled down, the protections whittled down, or, you know, promises for protections sort of made a little better, but still not applying to all the roadless areas. We must never forget that in the governor's latest unwritten proposal, over a 500,000 acres are on the chopping block and would not be protected. And that is a significant chunk of wild country. So I'll leave it at that and give the weirdness of the week to this bizarre situation on roadless areas in the state of Idaho on their National Forest Roadless Areas. A couple quick announcements before we go into Between the Lines, a news program here on KRFB Moscow. Special note to budding musicians, Moscow Food Co-op will soon be adding open mic nights to the Tuesday concert mix. The first open mic concert will be held on January 2nd. Each turn of the microphone will be limited to 3 songs or 15 minutes, whichever comes first. Contact Joseph Earhart Hudson at music at Moscow Food Co-op to sign up. There are more performers than time. First priority will be given to those who have signed up in advance. And secondly, interested in expanding your knowledge of America's own indigenous tribal governments, University of Idaho Political Science Department is offering a new class starting January 2007, Tribal Governments in the Nation. It's Political Science 404. It's taught by enrolled Nez Perce tribal members, Julian Matthews, and I believe Elliot Moffat is also teaching that with Julian. You can contact him at matt7069@uidaho.edu for more information, or 790-4296. And now, Between the Lines, you're listening to KRFB Moscow.